Welcome back to Top of the First with Cliff Connors. This is the final episode of the season with Golden Eagle Baseball and CCAA Baseball as a whole coming to a close. Last time we talked, I interviewed head coach Vince Barron-Healy ahead of LA's series against Cal Poly Pomona. Today, I'll give a quick recap of that series, along with the San Francisco State series the next weekend. The main focus of today's episode will be the final series of the regular season, where I attended all four games of the weekend series against Stanislaus State and got post-game interviews with Coach Barron-Healy each time, along with two player interviews. It was an intense four games, full of playoff hopes, scoreboard watching, and clutch hits. Then I'll give an end-of-season look at the whole CCAA. In this final episode, we'll wrap up the year in Golden Eagle Radio Baseball and keep the focus on them for LA Sports. Without further ado, let's get into it. When I spoke with Coach Barron-Healy ahead of the Pomona series, he recognized their strength when it comes to pitching. They had two pitchers in the top five of the CCAA ERA leaders, Reese Stevens at 3.27 and Caleb Reyes at 2.34, the best in the conference. Caleb Reyes opened their series against Holden Hungerford for LA. Hungerford went five innings and gave up three runs, and Michael Gill and Brent Jocks blanked Pomona the rest of the way, save for an unearned run in the eighth. The Golden Eagles started to get to Reyes late in the game, closing the gap to 4-3 and chasing Reyes with two outs in the bottom of the ninth. With a tying run, Malik Clayton, 90 feet away on third base, Drew Porter struck out to end it. Reese Stevens opened the second game and gave up just two runs, one earned, but LA chased him earlier, taking him out after five innings. Behind a one-run, six-and-a-third inning performance from Eric Navarrete and a go-ahead three-run home run from Isaiah Marquez in the seventh, the Golden Eagles evened the series with a 5-4 win. In the second game of the doubleheader, the dreaded fourth out killed LA. Owen Hunt, pitching with the hope of covering all seven innings, had been smooth sailing through three innings. He gave up a single to open the fourth, then a fielding error by Elijah Jackson made the first two reach, but Hunt got things back under control, inducing a pop-out and then getting a strikeout. But that fourth out, as it so often does with pitchers who deserve to be done with an inning, proved mortally elusive. A hit by pitch, then a pass ball, then a single, then a steal and a throwing error by Clayton, then another hit by pitch, and then the big blow, a three-run home run, before Hunt finally got a ground out to end the inning and his night. The six unearned runs were more than enough for Pomona, who won 6-1. The series finale was a rough one for LA, as they gave up 13 runs and mustered just three. Solo shots from Jackson, Clayton, and Javi Espinoza. A week later in San Fran, Cal State LA was playing to stay in the mix for that final spot in the CCAA tournament, the sixth seed, competing with Dominguez Hills, Sonoma State, and Chico State. For the first game, they moved Owen Hunt to the front like Barron-Healy said he planned to during our interview. He gave up six runs, five earned, and got taken out just before the end of the sixth. It was a game where Cal State LA was never really in it, and they lost 9-5. The second game was a wild shootout. After LA jumped out to a 2-0 lead in the top of the first, San Fran got a grand slam to take the lead in the bottom of that inning. A half inning later, LA responded with a grand slam of their own from Matthew Piotrowski. It was 6-5 at the end of two innings. Three RBI singles in the third, and then a Kai Penuelas three-run bomb in the fourth made it 12-5 LA. By the end of the sixth, San Fran had closed the gap to 12-10. Heading into the final inning, it was 14-all. Art Ruiz broke the tie with a two-run double, and LA won 17-14. In the second half of the doubleheader, LA had a 5-3 lead in the sixth inning, but a seven-run rally from San Fran knocked them off, a 10-5 final. In the series finale, San Fran had an 8-5 lead in the sixth inning, but then LA had their own seven-run rally, capped off by a Penuelas two-run shot to win 12-8 and finish the series even. So, heading into that final series, the main portion of our episode today, Cal State LA was sporting a 22-24 record overall, but more importantly, a 16-20 conference record. That put them 7th in the standings, just outside the playoff picture. Their team to beat was Sonoma State, at 6th, and also with a 16-20 conference record. Sonoma and LA were knotted up in so many categories. Same conference record, same overall record, an even head-to-head record, and somehow an even run differential in that head-to-head series. LA dominated the overall run differential category, but the tiebreaker that put Sonoma ahead was record against tournament teams. So LA was going to need to finish with a better record than Sonoma, not the same one. Chico State at the fifth seed was too far ahead to worry about, and Dominguez Hills right behind LA, well, if LA had to be worried about them, they'd be out of contention already. On Thursday night, as Cal State LA kicked off their series against the bottom dwellers of the CCAA, Stanislaus State, who were 12-22 in the conference, about 500 miles north at the same time, Sonoma was being hosted by Chico. It was a doubleheader for Sonoma, and they would go on to win both games, delivering a tough blow to LA's playoff hopes, regardless of their own Thursday result. I was there at Reeder Field, and I witnessed a rough one. Holden Hungerford started, Baron Healy told me later they had to push Hunt back because of an arm issue, and in the top of the first, a potential inning-ending double play turned into a run-seeding error after Espinoza muffed the throw to first. In the second inning, Alex Solis led off the inning for Stanislaus and hit one out. A three-hit, one-walk inning made it 3-0. In the bottom of the second inning, the Golden Eagles loaded the bases with nobody out. Ethan Gonzalez got a sac fly to bring home Clayton, and a potential inning-ending double play turned into a run-scoring error by Stanislaus, closing the gap to 3-2. Hungerford got chased in the third inning after giving up a two-run home run to Flavio Perez, and Michael Gill came on in relief to end the threat. In the fourth, Dorsey Chatham replaced Gill, presumably to be a length reliever. He started the year as a starter, and he gave up two runs to make it a 7-2 deficit. Chatham recorded just one out in the fifth before getting taken out because of a two-run single. Moises Escobedo, freshman reliever, came on and struck out both batters he faced, pumping up the team, but the jubilation was short-lived as LA went down in order right after. By the time the seventh-inning stretch rolled around, LA was down 17-2 and hadn't gotten a base runner on in 11 batters. Austin Ballantyne, Stanislaus' starter, was dealing, and although his streak got snapped at 13 batters when Gonzalez singled with two outs, no runs came across. In the top of the eighth inning, Baron Healy sent out a position player to pitch, catcher Atticus Gonzalez, who got a strikeout and pitched a scoreless inning, the only one LA would have all day. In the bottom of the eighth inning, Piotrowski hit a solo shot, and Ballantyne's last inning meant he finished with 8 innings pitched and 3 runs allowed. I was actually testing my recording device when Pio hit his dinger, so here's a little soundbite of the highlight. Kai Pinuela, seldom a pitcher, but with a few appearances, took the ninth, and a leadoff single became an inside-the-park home run after two errors in one play. In the bottom of the ninth, Brian Nunez hit a two-run home run, but it would not be enough to overcome the 16-run deficit, and LA lost 19-5 to put their season on the brink. I spoke with Coach Baron Healy after the game about the tough one.
Well, the game got out of hand pretty quickly. What was your strategy when managing the bullpen with three more games to be played over the next 2 days?
Well, until we got to the third or fourth inning, we were still thinking we could get back in the game. And we felt pretty good that we would get back into it offensively. So we brought guys in that we felt would get outs, and, you know, today was just not our day. I mean, they really swung the bat well and hit every pitch we threw today. So it was just chalk it up to a little bit of baseball today, unfortunately.
Yeah. The lineup couldn't muster much against, at least until late, against Austin Ballantyne. He went 8 innings, 3 runs. Were you seeing anything from him to explain the quiet bats?
Yeah, I'm not real sure. I mean, he did a good job of pitching tonight. I think his ball had quite a bit of movement on it tonight. He's not an overpowering guy, but we hit a lot of balls off the end of the bat. He's got a really fast arm and not a lot of velocity coming behind it. So I think that deception, I think, got us a little bit early. And then we were just chasing. So I think once you start chasing that hard, guys are trying to do more than they really need to do, and it just changes your at bat completely.
Yeah, and Sonoma State, they won earlier today. They're in the middle of a doubleheader, the second game right now. How is your strategy as a manager changing at all this weekend with the must win games coming up?
Well, we had a little bit of arm issue with our one, so we had to push him back this week. He'll go tomorrow, but nothing overly is changing from this point. I mean, we had some changes, obviously, in that game where we tried to keep guys fresh to come back on Saturday. Some of the early guys that we use. And then late, you know, we used a couple of position players and just wanted to get outs there to save our bullpen. We had, once we got to the fifth inning, there were five bullpen arms we didn't want to show them. So, you know, we did think ahead as that game progressed, and, you know, we know now we are in a must-win with Sonoma winning, so they're actually leading in game two, too, right now, so.
Yeah, no, I was thinking it's like the sixth or seventh inning right now, yeah.
3-2. So, yeah.
But, yeah, do you have how do you plan to rally the guys with a doubleheader tomorrow?
Well, we'll just come out and, you know, it's their season. They know what's on the line here, and I'm pretty sure they'll come out motivated tomorrow.
I also had a quick talk with Pio after the game, who actually put up a decent night amidst the blowout, coming a triple shy of the cycle.
Opposing pitcher Austin Valentine, he had a pretty strong night. He went 8 innings, 3 runs, but you saw him pretty well. You got a single, a double, and a home run. What were you seeing in those at-bats that led to those 3 hits?
It's just finding ways just to simplify. I mean, he had command of all pitches that he threw. He could locate. He's keeping the ball down. It's just us finding ways to minimize the winning a pitch, winning one pitch at a time.
So, yeah, and with the doubleheader tomorrow, how do you guys plan to rally?
Kind of going back to what I originally said, just winning one pitch at a time. If we can win more pitches than them, win more frames than them, we should be all right.
Awesome. Yeah, and Sonoma State, they're ahead right now, and they've had a doubleheader today, and you guys are right behind them for that final spot in the standings entering the playoffs. What's going through your head during this must-win series right here?
Just controlling the things that we can. You know, whether they win or we win, or those things are out of control, but what we can't control is playing good defense, throwing strikes, and having quality at-bats.
So after Sonoma won both their games, the stakes were clear. Cal State LA not only needed to win out the rest of the way, but they also needed Sonoma to lose both games of their second doubleheader on Friday. Both teams were playing doubleheaders on Friday, though for Sonoma, it was their last 2 games of the season, and for LA, they had one more on Senior Day the next day. Chico did their job early on for LA, beating Sonoma 14-6 on Friday morning. I was back at Reader with the season on the line. Hunt, with his arm ready, took the ball in the first game. 4 reached in the top of the first inning, and 2 runs came across on a wild pitch and a throwing error. In the bottom of the first, LA loaded the bases with nobody out, but a double play wiped out the runner coming home and the runner heading to third. Clayton struck out to end the opportunity. Cesar Chavez tied the game in the second inning with a 2-run single before Clayton atoned for a strikeout in a big way by putting LA up with a 2-run shot. Hunt had been dealing into the 5th inning, but he surrendered a game-tying 2-run home run to JD Madrigal. The bottom of the 5th was a big one for the Golden Eagles. Clayton was once again the catalyst, hitting a 2-run single with the bases loaded and nobody out. Penuelos got an RBI knock to chase the Stanislaus starter, and 2 RBI groundouts followed by an Elijah Jackson RBI double made it a 10-4 game. The very next half inning had a curious start. Hunt threw 4 straight wild pitches to open the inning, prompting a visit from Baron Healy and company, but he shooed them off to stay in the game. Another 4-pitch walk. The pitching coach visited, but Hunt stayed in. Another 4-pitch walk. Throwing 12 consecutive balls to open the inning and loading the bases already finally ended Hunt's game. I talked with Baron Healy after the game about the exchange there.
You often start Owen Hunt either to open the series or in the doubleheader game. You mentioned yesterday that you had some arm issues with your one. I was assuming you were referring to him. But what went into your decision to start him through the first game rather than the 7-inning second game?
If we're in an elimination game, I'm going to have Owen have the ball. He's been our guy for 3 years, and I've got to hand him the ball if I need to win a game.
And there was an unusual sequence to open that top of the 6th inning. Owen Hunt walked 3 guys to open the inning. There were some mound visits in between each. What went into your reasoning to leave him in at first and then eventually take him out?
Well, my first concern was his arm, and he threw a pitch to the backstop that looked really funny to me, but he said he was fine, so I was going to trust him. It was his call. It's his career, and he said that he was fine and he'd get the guy out, so I let him go, and then ultimately, he couldn't throw strikes. His forearm tightened up.
Brent Jacques came on in relief, and he fell behind 3-0. If you're counting, that's 15 straight balls. But he battled back to get a strikeout 3 pitches later, a good pressure play to maintain control of the game. The next batter put an 0-2 pitch into the corner of right field for a 2-run double, and a full count shot to right dropped in to bring in another, closing Hunt's book at 5 innings, 7 runs. A passed ball allowed the 4th run of the inning to cross, but Jacques ended the inning 1 pitch later with a strikeout. LA was still up 10-8. I talked with Malik Clayton, who was catching those pitchers, about that inning.
You were behind the plate during in the first game during a shaky start to the sixth inning when Owen Hunt walked three guys and then Brent Jocks came in and he fell behind 3-0 to the first batter he faced. How did you guide him back into that at bat and keep the inning under control?
From that point, you really just got to tell your pitcher, like, you got to dig deep right here. You know, you're put in a tough situation. It's like anything can happen. So you just got to focus on executing your plan. And sometimes, you know, it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. So it worked out in his favor, though.
Mm-hmm. And what pitches were you relying on to get through that inning with him?
Really the off-speed. The more we can get the off-speed for a strike, the more we can, like, control their hitters. So that was working for him today, and it got through us the inning.
In the bottom of that inning, the Golden Eagles had a two-out rally. Penuelas doubled to put two runners in scoring position for Ruiz, who, one pitch after accidentally throwing his bat towards the Stanislaus dugout, hit a liner to right to score both guys. A pair of two-run hits from Isaiah Marquez and Penuelas expanded the lead to 16-8. In the eighth inning, Jacques finished out three innings of work without an earned run. Four runs in the bottom of the eighth, and LA had put up a 20 spot. Michael Gill appeared for the second time in as many days to close it out, and Cal State LA, with the season fading, had given themselves new life. I spoke with Baron Healy in between the games.
With Jacques and Gill covering the rest of the game, what's the pitching plan for tonight?
Whoever takes.
Yeah.
Who's your starter? We're going with Navarrete.
All right, okay. And then just one more thing. Malik Clayton, he didn't catch for very long last game, just right towards the end. Is he going to be catching behind the plate again tonight?
He caught the whole game.
No, I'm referring to last night.
Yeah. Oh, no, he is not going to catch this game. We're going to have Atticus back out there again for this game.
And will he be DHing?
He will be DHing, yes.
Unfortunately for LA, by the time they finished their win, Sonoma was already up 4-0 on Chico in the second game of their doubleheader. As LA began their nightcap, let the scoreboard watching begin. Well, by the time the second game started, it was 7-1 Sonoma. In the top of the first, Eric Navarrete, as Baron Healy said, got the start. Pio made an athletic catch right by the Stanislaus dugout to end the scoreless inning. In that time, Chico closed the gap to 7-4, and LA could breathe. With two outs in the bottom of the first, Pio smacked one to the corner of right field and hustled through three bags. After the throw to third base went out of play, it became an inside-the-park home run. LA was pumped. But there was a reason to be worried. Sonoma had re-expanded their lead to 10-4. In the second, Navarrete loaded the bases with nobody out, but a sack bunt and two strikeouts kept the damage minimal. With two on in the bottom of the second, Atticus Gonzalez flew out deep to left at the warning track. Later that inning, to take a saying from Dodgers play-by-play announcer Joe Davis, deuces wild. He says that when there are two on, two outs, and an imminent 2-2 pitch. Here the deuces got real wild. It was in the second inning, where there were two on, two outs, and a 2-2 pitch to Eliza Jackson, number two. But he flew out to right. Up in Chico, Sonoma kept their lead at 10-4 heading into the bottom of the fifth inning for a seven-inning game. In the next half inning, with two outs, Flavio Perez hit a three-run bomb to right off Navarrete, making it a 4-1 game. At the same time, Sonoma moved to six outs away from clinching their spot in the postseason as the lights started to dim on the Golden Eagle season. In the bottom of the third, Clayton doubled in Marquez to close the gap to two, and in the top of the fourth, Navarrete got two strikeouts in a 1-2-3 inning to fire up the dugout. No signs of giving up yet. In the bottom of the fourth, Ethan Gonzalez hit a booming ground rule double to left field, but right after him, Atticus Gonzalez flew out to the track right near where Gonzalez's double had landed in the previous at-bat. Elijah Jackson struck out to strand a runner in scoring position, and at the same time, Sonoma moved to three outs away from ending LA's playoff hopes. In the successive half inning, Navarrete got a strikeout to end a 1-2-3 inning, and the dugout showed no signs of losing energy. With two outs in the bottom of the fifth, Malik Clayton was batting in a 2-2 count. 8 hours northward, Chico State was down to their last out. Andrew Crane, right fielder for Chico, was on first base when Sonoma pitcher Nick Camajes twisted and picked him off. Game over for Chico. Lights out for LA. After some Golden Eagles probably heard about the Chico loss, tensions flared in the top of the sixth. Navarrete hit Flavio Perez with a pitch, the same guy that homered off him three innings earlier. Perez had words for Navarrete before the umpires and coaches made sure things went no further. The LA dugout rallied around this, going wild after Navarrete got a big strikeout and then after Javier Espinoza made a quick-handed play to strand the bases loaded. In the bottom of the sixth, with the Golden Eagles down to their last five outs in the seven-inning nightcap, Anthony Angel Jr. grounded into a double play, firing up the Stanislaus dugout and demoralizing the LA side. In the final innings, things slipped away. Anthony Diaz came in for Navarrete and surrendered four runs, two earned. LA went down in order, with Marquez grounding out to end it. Coach Baron Healy addressed the team after the tough loss, and a mostly stoic squad got to cleaning up the field. I spoke with Malik Clayton at this time.
So you had a strong performance in the first game today, gathering two hits, including a home run, three runs scored, four RBIs. What were you seeing from the Stanislaus State pitcher that led to those hits?
Honestly, I didn't even feel good at the dish today. I wasn't like, didn't feel like comfortable in the plate, but I just had to like, you know, dog it out and just get my pitch and not miss it. So that was my approach today.
Nice, yeah. Now, what are you thinking about heading into tomorrow's finale, which you now know will be the last game of the year?
Man, I just want to go out, you know, with my guys, all my seniors, you know, just, I mean, have the most fun game we can for the last game of the season, you know, so that would be the goal. Just, you know, make sure the seniors feel like, you know, good season, but let's go out with a bang. Have fun.
All right, sorry about the loss, Coach.
Yeah, not fun.
Well, as you know, Chico and Sonoma were playing a game that would determine your playoff fate.
Yeah,
it started about an hour before the start of today's nightcap. What did you, if anything, did you tell the team before the second game tonight about scoreboard watching?
Well, we weren't going to scoreboard watch during a game. Mm-hmm. I did. You know, the coaches did, because we had to know how to maneuver the game and manipulate the game a little bit. But, you know, they didn't. They had no idea to this point. They were playing to win the game itself. So, you know, they knew what had to happen, but they weren't aware of what was going on during the game.
Yeah, so you didn't tell them when it ended. Okay. And then it was the bottom of the fifth inning when Sonoma completed their win. Were you aware right away?
Yes.
Did that change your strategy for the game at all?
No. I mean, we still were playing to win, and we want to end on a positive note. You know, coaches were certainly disappointed at the time, but it didn't really affect anything that we did on the field. The pinch hitters we used would have been the same, and that was all about trying to win the ballgame.
Mm-hmm. And opposing player Flavio Perez hit a three-run home run in the third inning, and he seemed to take it personally when Eric Navarrete hit him with a pitch a few innings later. Do you think that exchange of words affected the team at all?
I don't think so. No, I mean, it's just baseball. I mean, Eric made a mistake on the pitch that he hit the homer on. It was supposed to be fastball in, and he left it out over the plate. And so then we go back to try to correct that. We go fastball in the next time, and he hits him. And he didn't like it, and it didn't look good from the optics, but it didn't affect anything that happened.
Mm-hmm. And then what do you plan to tell the team heading into senior day tomorrow after finishing about as close as you have to the CCA tournament since 2018?
Well, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to say yet. It wasn't our job to finish close. You know, we're disappointed. Everybody's hurting here. So it's going to be my job to lift them up and have them ready to go tomorrow.
The next morning, with a tournament appearance no longer on the table, LA came out with one goal in the season finale: send the seniors off right. On senior day, seven of the nine guys in the batting lineup were departing, as every position player on the roster that was either a senior or a grad student got the start. Graduate student Daniel Quintero got the start on the mound, allowing one run but otherwise escaping a bases-loaded one-out jam. Senior Troy Maki replaced Quintero in the next inning. He gave up two singles to open the inning, but escaped after nabbing the lead runner on a bunt, and then a flyout became a double play when Art Ruiz in right field gunned down the runner trying to advance to third. Michael Gill replaced Maki next, surrendering a leadoff home run to make it 2-0 Stanislaus, but he retired the next three. The Golden Eagles scored one in the bottom half of that inning on a bases-loaded walk from Isaiah Marquez. In the fourth inning, Coach Baron Healy put in his usual starter for this game, senior Miles Halligan. Those three opening pitchers were evidently to give the departing pitchers some action in case Halligan went long. He looked good early, retiring Stanislaus in order and getting two Ks. In the next inning, things went south. Single, walk, walk, and the bases were loaded with nobody out. A wild pitch gave up the first run of the inning, and JD Madrigal cleared the bases with a three-run shot. A four-pitch walk and a single chase Halligan. It's now 6-1 Stanislaus. Senior Anthony Diaz relieves him. He throws a wild pitch and surrenders an RBI single, then gives up another run on another wild pitch. He records the first out of the inning on a strikeout, but then gives up a two-run double to end his day. Freshman Moises Escobedo is now the third pitcher of this inning, and he induced two flyouts to end the top of the fifth in what became a 10-1 game. In the bottom of that inning, a single-walk single sequence loaded the bases with no outs for Pio Trowski. Pio grounded softly to short, but hustled out the double play to preserve his RBI. Right after him, Isaiah Marquez launched a three-run bomb. Suddenly, we had a ballgame, 10-5. In the next half inning, senior Joel Martinez came in and LA kept the momentum going with a double play to escape a bases-loaded one-out jam. Elijah Jackson homered to continue the chip away. It's now 10-6. Martinez continued to roll, inducing three straight pop-outs to put the bats back in LA's hands. With runners at the corners and two outs, Anthony Angel Jr. got a clutch RBI single. Then senior Andrew Duran, who had just 12 at-bats all year prior to this, came up representing somehow the tying run. Just two innings ago, it had been 10-1 Stanislaus. Duran smacked the first pitch he saw to the left field corner for a two-run double. This became a one-run game. After a strikeout ended the rally, LA had all the momentum in the world entering the final two innings. But then it all came to a halt. In the top of the eighth, two hits and a hit-by-pitch load him up. A sac fly to deep center scored the first of the inning. Martinez nearly glove-tossed a bunt home to nab the leading runner, but instead nobody is out, and it's 12-9. Another hit-by-pitch and another bunt single made it 13-9, still with just one out. A grounder to Jackson at third made it two outs, but his potential inning-ending throw to first is late. Another ground-up finally ends it, but the damage was done. 14-9 Stanislaus, the rally work of the previous two innings undone. LA put two on in the eighth but couldn't capitalize. After all the seniors got a chance to pitch at least once that weekend, sophomore Kai Penuelas closed the ninth. LA went down in order in the bottom of the ninth, with Brayan Nunez popping out to second to end the season. After the game ended, Coach Baron Healy addressed the team for a while, then began celebrations for Senior Day. Families of the players were invited onto the field, and tons of photos were taken as the Golden Eagles bid farewell to their seniors. During the celebration, I talked with Coach one last time. Here's what he had to say, shortly after finishing his best season in years.
So every senior or grad student position player on the roster started the game today. Your pitchers were pretty much all, I mean, there were a few non-seniors, but Escobedo and Pinuelas. What do you tell the team before today, knowing it could be the last baseball game of their career for many of them?
Well, we've spoken about that, you know, kind of all year. So today was a day to honor them, and I felt like they all deserve that opportunity to start and to play today. And they've given everything they've had to this university and this baseball program. So I was proud to be able to put them out on that field today.
Yeah, and you guys had a rough top of the fifth inning using three pitchers and giving up eight runs. And at that point, you were down 10-1. And then in the bottom of that inning, Isaiah Marquez hit a three-run home run. And you guys at one point closed the gap all the way to 10-9. What do you think turned things around at that point?
Well, there's no quitting this group. And I knew that they would show their character before the day was out. It was just a matter of whether we could catch them or not, because we'd build ourselves such a deficit. But we felt all along that we would be able to catch them, and we just ran out of pitching today a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And then Joel Martinez, he's been a multi-inning closer for you guys for much of the season. Were you intending for him to finish out the game when you put him in that sixth inning?
We knew we had three out of him. We knew the fourth was going to be a difficult situation for us, because he hasn't gone four yet. He's done a seventh, eighth, ninth inning close for us. But, you know, we were hopeful, but we knew at that point we had to try to stay in the game where we were, because we were down and chasing, mm-hmm. and we wanted to make sure that we stayed in the game. And we still had others left that we could go to. We just, you know, we're hoping we didn't have to, but we were pretty sure we were going to.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, how do you feel about the season as a whole, finishing seventh in the CCAA and contending for a tournament spot through the final weekend?
As we talked as a team, we're all very disappointed in our finish. And you know, our goal isn't to be not in the conference tournament. That's not our goal. Our goal is to win the conference. After that, we got to be sure that we're in the conference tournament to give ourselves a chance to get in the regional. Only one team's happy at the end of the year, you know, in Division II baseball, of all the schools that are playing. Only one's going to be happy. We just ended ours a lot sooner than we wanted to.
All right, thank you.
You got it.
Appreciate it.
Let's take a look at the final stats for the season. The team finished 23-27 overall and 17-23 in the conference. Elijah Jackson just barely squeezed out the team batting title, finishing at 351 ahead of Piotrowski and Clayton at 350 and Marquez at 348. Along with Javi Espinoza and Ethan Gonzalez, LA finished with six qualifying batters above 300. Jackson was 15th overall in the CCAA and led the team in at-bats, hits, singles, doubles, triples, runs, and total bases as well. Isaiah Marquez and Malik Clayton finished with OPSs above 100, that elite threshold, with 1,039 and 1,033 tallies, respectively. They were 8th and 9th in the CCAA standings. Marquez comfortably took the RBI title with 52, finishing 5th in the CCAA. Marquez again narrowly beat out Clayton for the slugging title, this time at 602 to 600. Again, they were 8th and 9th in the CCAA. In on-base percentage, the same thing. Marquez at first at 43.7, Clayton second and close behind at 43.3. A lot of CCAA batters were stuffed between them in the league standings, putting Marquez at 14th and Clayton at 20th, despite a 0.4% difference. After an improved season of more than 50% newcomers, it makes sense that the leaders in nearly all categories were first-time Golden Eagles. However, Matthew Piotrowski, now an LA vet, led the team in stolen bases and finished top four in every meaningful batting category, completing a second straight year of dominant offensive contribution. As a team, they were 6th in the CCAA in average at 307 and runs with 354, so right in the middle of the 11-team conference there. They were 4th in hits, but 7th in home runs, 5th in slugging, 8th in on-base percentage. On the pitching side, Owen Hunt was the only qualifying pitcher, meaning his 63 and a third innings pitched was the only mark to eclipse the 50-inning minimum. Navarrete nearly hit that threshold, coming 4 outs short. The next two were the other starters in the final rotation, Hungerford and Halligan. Navarrete had the best stats of the four, sporting a 4.25 ERA and a 1.29 whip, despite having the highest batting average against at 289. He didn't give many free passes at all, though, walking just 8 guys all season. Owen Hunt had by far the best batting average against, holding opponents to a 216 average, the second best among qualifying CCAA pitchers. But a lack of command got to him, gathering the second most walks of any CCAA hurler with 43. His 19 wild pitches were far and away the most in the conference. And when they hit Hunt, they hit him hard, banging 10 home runs off him, 4 more than off any other pitcher on the roster. Hunt's 6 wins were easily the most on the team, though. On the relief side, Joel Martinez led the team in saves with 6, just ahead of Anthony Diaz and Brent Jacques, who had 4 and 3 to lead the bullpen. As a team, despite allowing the fewest hits of any CCAA team, the Golden Eagles were 7th in ERA at 6.66, partly because they had the second most walks and 95 wild pitches, 34 more than any other team, and 112 hit-by-pitches, 33 more than any other team. They were also first in errors, with 85 in 50 games, and last in fielding percentage at 95.3. It all added up to 354 runs scored and 375 runs allowed. Their 7.08 runs per game was stellar, but they also gave up 7.5 runs per game. You'll notice that's quite a bit higher than their ERA. They give up 69 unearned runs in the season, a massive blow to their quest for victory. Had they given up half as many unearned runs, they would have easily had a positive run differential. Coach Baron Healy will undoubtedly have his eye on that going into next season. 17 of the 38 players on the roster this year were seniors or graduate students. Most of them likely won't be here in 2025. To wrap up top of the first in 2024, let's take a look at the stars of tomorrow. Those two batters that dominated the top two in nearly every offensive category, Isaiah Marquez and Malik Clayton, both juniors. Marquez started 44 of 50 games and appeared in 48. Clayton started in 40 and appeared in 44, which is a huge workload for a catcher that he and Baron Healy will try to replicate next year. Other than potentially competing for a CCAA batting title next year, these two don't even have much they need to improve on. Ethan Gonzalez, the sophomore who qualified and hit 318 this year, is another guy to keep your eye on for next year. His batting average was great, but he'll look to add more power next year. He gathered 48 hits and 46 starts, but just 7 of them were for extra bases. The 5'11", 170-pound shortstop just finished his second year with the program, and he's turned in an excellent first half of his Cal State LA career. So for the batting side, many of the mainstays in the lineup will in all likelihood still be here next year, considering 4 of the 7 qualifiers aren't seniors. On the pitching side, we'll be seeing more fresh faces in 2025. Just one guy in the top 8 pitchers on the team in innings pitched is not a senior or grad student, Holden Hungerford, who took on a starting role later in the season. He's a freshman.
Hungerford made 8 starts and 11 appearances. He finished with a 2-3 record and a 5.83 ERA, better than the team average. Considering how many in-game reps he got this year, Baron Healy is sure to have his eye on Hungerford's development, with 3 more years to turn him into the next Golden Eagle ace. Overall, we should expect lots of new faces come 2025, just like we saw this year. Baron Healy's recruiting paid dividends in 2024, giving them their strongest season in quite a bit. If he can make forward progress again next year, we should be seeing a tournament team come next May. That's all I got for you in this season of Golden Eagle Baseball. Be sure to check out the Golden Eagles fall sports, especially the reigning D2 national champs in volleyball. Finally, thank you again to Coach Baron Healy for sitting down and talking with me for the last episode, then taking the time to answer my questions during the final series. It was a pleasure covering your squad. And thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your summer. Till next time.